Good to see each of you back this evening for our study together. Should have gotten an outline of the book of Daniel, or at least of some of the things I'm going to mention about the book of Daniel. It may not be exactly an outline of the book itself. The book is apocalyptic to some extent, somewhat similar to the book of Revelation. So it tends to be a little bit more difficult to study. I preface my lesson with those remarks with your understanding that I've been sick. So maybe you should be, one of you should be a peer teacher. But we appreciate you being here, and I've gathered some notes of my own in addition to the ones that's included in your outline. The book is a very interesting book. We can remember from our youth, many of us can, the story of the Daniel in the lion's den, the fiery furnace, and those that were in the furnace, and how they were able to escape harm. Other than that, we don't remember probably too much about the book of Daniel. Book of Daniel, though, has a number of things that we're going to look at tonight in the minutes of time that we have allotted. Book of Daniel was written in two languages. I thought I'd bring that up. I don't know either one of those languages, but anyway, the book of Daniel, chapter 2, 46 through 70, through 28, chapter 2, latter part of 4, through chapter 7, verse 28. I don't know what I said the first time, but that's what it says. It's written in Aramaic. The remainder's in Hebrew. And that's interesting. Because I thought it was interesting and would make a point of it tonight. But Daniel was a Jew of the southern kingdom of Judah. He went into Babylon, and the people there spoke Aramaic. This was for a period of at least 70 years, because that was the period of the captivity. So by the end of that particular captivity period, all the Jews that were there, I assume, spoke Hebrew, I mean, spoke Aramaic, in addition to maybe somebody keeping the Hebrew tongue. But he was taken into Babylon in 606 B.C. He lived the balance of his life there. He learned the common language of the Babylonians, Aramaic, which you could expect. That became the tongue of the Hebrews while they were in captivity and thereafter, including down to the time of Jesus. So we can see why there's some Aramaic, I think, in some, maybe in some of the books of the New Testament. Some words are not, that Jesus uses are not, translated into English. If you notice, I think some of the words on the cross, and I believe that's, in the Aramaic or Hebrew tongue. Aramaic, I think. But there were two languages that they were using, three languages, Aramaic, Hebrew, and then Greek was the common language of the day of the first century. But the Jews primarily spoke Aramaic, at least the writer I was looking at suggested that. Book covers a period from 606 B.C. to 536 B.C. They're pretty sure of those years because the book of Daniel names in Daniel 1 and verse 1 and 10:1, the two kings that were ruling at that particular time. They've been able to fix the date fairly accurately of those kings. A background of the book, who was Daniel? His name means God is my judge. God is my judge. I guess we could all bear that name of Daniel, because God will be our judge. He was born of a noble family. As mentioned, he was among the captives taken in the first deportation. He was among several young men who were chosen out of all the Hebrews to be around in the king's palace. The procedure back then, or the policy, was to choose some nice-looking young fellows, healthy young fellows, intelligent young men, and to bring them into the palace. And the procedure with Nebuchadnezzar and the folks under his reign and in his time period, they would feed them certain food, have them drink wine, and they'd check on them throughout a three-year period to see how these young men were progressing. I suppose they felt like maybe that would cement their relationship a little bit more with the with those that they had taken captive, and possibly it did. But so he was trained for special service in the palace of King Nebuchadnezzar, initially, king of Babylon. His name was changed to Belshazzar, not to be confused with Belshazzar, but possibly will be. Belshazzar was the son of Nebuchadnezzar and the king that followed Nebuchadnezzar as king of Babylon. So he was given the name of Belshazzar. Unlike his three friends, look at chapter 1, verse 7, if you got the Bible with you, and you want to turn to Daniel. Daniel is right over there smack dab in the middle of the Old Testament, after Psalms and Proverbs and Isaiah and Jeremiah and Ezekiel, Lamentations. You're going to run into it. Maybe not in that order, but somewhere near. Book of Daniel, verse 7 says, to them the chief of the eunuchs gave names. He gave Daniel the name Belshazzar. Now, if I told you about Hananiah and Mishael and Azariah, you might not know who I was talking about. But their names were changed to Shadrach, Meshach, and what's his name? Abednego. Looks like the way it's divided out instead of Abednego, like I always pronounce it. Abednego. What was interesting there in that little deal? They renamed Daniel Belshazzar, Belteshazzar, but the name didn't seem to hang with him in the book of Daniel. Daniel continued to use his own name, but of his three friends, he changed their names to the names that were given to him. And of course, I guess if you're the writer of the book, you have your own free will and own free reign of who you're going to call yourself. So he continued to be called God is my judge. That might be an interesting take on it. Because we're going to find in the way he reacted to circumstances while he lived, in the palace, area of the palace, we're going to see that he not only stayed true to his name, but he did those things that that suggested and that proved that he stayed true to his name. He was the deeply spiritual man. He maintained his integrity in some very trying circumstances. First thing I ran across in chapter 1, beginning with verse 8, is he refused to eat the food that was offered to him that was supposed to make him, make his flesh, be like some of these cover girls, I guess, on these magazines. I've never seen them, but that's what I'm told. they have a smooth skin. But he was told, you need to eat this food, and you need to drink this wine. And evidently there was something about that food that was against his religion. Maybe it was unclean as far as the Jews eating it, or maybe it was related to an offering to an idol, which would, in a sense, make it unclean. But he refused to eat the food, and the way he went about it was he talked to the man that was in charge, the chief of the eunuchs. He said, the chief said, you got to do it, because that's the order that's come down. You got to eat this special food. And Daniel said, because you're going to wind up completely different, you four men, or whoever, I think the other guys went with him, you're going to wind up different from these other men. They're going to be far ahead of you as to looks or whatever and whatever. The intelligence and the ability to do this and that and the other, wisdom, thinking, I guess. And Daniel said, let's try for 10 days on my way. So, you know, let's do it my way and let me continue to eat what I've been eating. I think everything will be all right. And it was. It was. After 10 days, they compared them to the rest of them, and their appearance was at least as good or better than the rest of them. And they had knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams, and none of the rest of the people had. In chapter 5, we won't read those verses. Chapter 5, verse 24, it says that, it mentions that he spoke God's message faithfully. I think in that chapter, let's see what they're talking about there. Talking about interpreting the handwriting on the wall. Remember, the handwriting was on the wall, and Belshazzar was king now. That Mene Tekel Upharsin. Weighed in the balances and you're found lacking. And Daniel had to tell the king that that's what it said. That, you know, kings were not prone to want to hear that kind of message. You know, you're weighed in the balances and you just don't quite measure up, fella. But he was told that. And so they clothed Daniel in purple as a result of it, put a gold chain around his neck and made a proclamation concerning he should be third ruler in the kingdom. So this king took it quite well, and he was promoted, you might say. He prayed to God despite the consequences of doing that prayer. In chapter 2, well, let me see, Chapter 6, rather, talks about the being in the lion's den because of not really worshiping and praying to the other gods, rather he continued to pray to his own God. He was highly respected because he was an interpreter of dreams, chapter 2, 27 through 30. I'm having to look at these to see if they're, if we're in connection with our time, whether I have time to read them as opposed to reading some others. We'll read this. Daniel 2:27-30. Daniel answered to the presence of the king, said the secret which the king had demanded. Now this has to do with Nebuchadnezzar's vision. That the secret the king has demanded, the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the soothsayers cannot be declared to the king. So we're not looking at the revelation of it or the interpretation, but just something that Daniel says about how he's able to do this. There's a God in heaven, verse 28 says, who reveals secrets. And he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. Your dream and the vision of your head upon your bed were these. As for you, O king, thoughts came to your mind while on your bed about what would come to pass after this. And he who reveals secrets has made known to you what will be. Notice the approach Daniel takes. He's not saying, you know, I'm interpreting this for you and making him mad. He says, this has been revealed to you. But as for me, this secret has not been revealed to me because I have more wisdom than anyone in living, but for our sakes who make known the interpretation to the king. He says, it's not... not because I have a whole lot more wisdom. I'm smarter than anybody else. And that you may know the thoughts of your heart. So he gives God the glory is the way I see that. And he's highly respected for it. He served in a number of government posts over a period of that 30 years. He served under three kings, Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar, and Darius. And in two different empires, the Babylonian and the Medo-Persian. Now there's a whole lot of other background information you could get probably from any good commentary on the book of Daniel. But some key notes of the book of Daniel. I think I've got these in your notes. Key message or theme is God is a universal sovereign of all. I mean, throughout this book, God is at work in everything that has to do with these kings and their reign and what they're going to do as it relates to God. I don't know what's going to happen in this country in years to come. Maybe we ought not worry about it. As far as we're thinking that we're going to be overrun by Muslims before it's over with, or Buddhists, or whatever. Maybe God will take care of it. Maybe God will take care of us. Maybe we could change that maybe to something else and say, surely God will take care of us. And surely God will take care of the situation. All that doesn't mean we're not going to have difficult circumstances. I mean, Daniel was put in the fire furnace along with his comrades, and Daniel wound up in the lion's den. But even the king at that time, when he was put in the lion's den, was saying, you know, your God's going to take care of you. I hate to see this happen, but you know, the laws of the Medes, I think it was Darius, the laws of the Medes and Persians can't be changed. And so you got to go in the den, and your God will take care of you. And so, looks like Daniel about to convert the old boy, you know, about to bring him around to his way of thinking rather than worshiping other gods as they did. Key verses, chapter 2, verse 20 through 22. There's many other verses. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and raises up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and secret things. He knows what is in the darkness, and light dwells with him. See, we don't understand all those things, do we? Just like when God was talking to Job, and Job sought to try to understand what was going on. And God wanted to know, well, where were you in the creation? You know what? How did I get along without you as my right-hand man? You know, how was I able to create all those things? And you weren't around, Job. So it kind of stopped Job in his tracks by that comment. Because God is in control. He's universal sovereign of all. Nations are under his power. And destinies of individuals, at least back at that time, and I think today to a great extent, are under his control. Not meaning we don't have choice, but that God is in control. Look at chapter 4, verse 17. Kind of key verses. Chapter 4, verse 17. This decision is by the decree of the watchers and the sentence by the word of the Holy One, in order that the living may know what? That the Most High rules in the kingdom of men. I expect God knows what the Republicans are up to and what the Democrats are up to. And who is crooked and who's not crooked. Who's in the White House and who's making decisions and he's involved. That the Most High rules in the kingdoms of men, gives it to whomever he will, and sets over it the lowest of men. I guess the humble men. Sometimes it's difficult for us to see that. Now, key phrases, and look at chapter 2 and verse 28. We just read, we didn't finish chapter 4. Look at chapter 4, verse 25, where something similar said, so they shall drive you, and you won't get all the gist of a verse by me just reading this verse, but you'll get the gist of what I'm trying to say here, or what this point is. They shall drive you from men, your dwelling will be with the beasts of the field. This is Nebuchadnezzar when he's going to eat, like going out and eat some grass. They shall make you eat grass like oxen. They shall wet you with the dew of heaven. Seven times shall pass over you till you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses. Now this was said to the king. This was said to Nebuchadnezzar before he became a donkey. Before he started his life as a vegetarian. Chapter 4, verse 32. They shall drive you from men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make, this is about the same thing, shall make you eat grass like oxen. Seven times shall pass over you until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses. Again and again. And those are the key phrases there. The Most High rules in the kingdom of men. I think I got that on yours. That we just read those verses. And also in chapter 2, verse 28, that I was going to read out of order there a while ago. Chapter 2, 28, there is a God in heaven. But there is a God in heaven. Now, it goes on and finishes that sentence, but you know, that's a pretty good sentence in itself. You could put a period right there. There is a God in heaven. That would preach, wouldn't it? That's something we can hang our hat on. There's a God in heaven. You know, it doesn't matter. I just listened to a Brad Paisley song on the way in. Now, it's not all a good song, but he talked about what country music talks about. And one of the things he mentioned is that Jesus Christ is a Savior, and that we can teach that because we're singing country music, he says. We do in country music, he said. Well, we do in churches of Christ. We say that Jesus Christ is the answer and the only answer. Doesn't matter how many Muslims move to this country. Doesn't matter how many Buddhists move to this country. It doesn't matter how many of any other religion. Jesus Christ is still the answer. None of those others are the answer. Now, that may not be what you want to say if you were meeting somebody the first time that was another religion. We have to be tactful in such things, but we need to be sure that we are not compromising what we believe to be politically correct, I guess would be the phrase. Be politically correct, or be this and the other correct. We worry too much about being politically correct. Some major lessons or issues in the book of Daniel. I just put down a couple of things. Faithfulness under difficult circumstances. And I think we see that throughout Daniel's stay in the city of Babylon. The Bible, though, is filled with examples after example of those who face difficulties and remain faithful to God. You go back to the time of Joseph, along about chapters 38 through 50, when he goes down into Egypt. He's tempted to sin with Potiphar's wife. A number of temptations. He's tempted when his brothers come down to Egypt. Oh, the temptation was great, I bet. But he was God's man. He was there because of the provision of God for his people. Because they were to come down later. That was in God's plan. Joseph was just as much in God's plan as Abraham was in God's plan. Joshua and Caleb, two men that remained faithful despite 10 other men being against them when they went out there and spied in the land. They came back with a minority report, or we can take the land, you know, with God's force, and we can handle it. The other 10 said, nah, and no, they're like giants in there, and we're like grasshoppers. They still stood up. Remember, it was later Joshua became the leader when Moses was no longer able to lead the people, passed away before he died before he entered the promised land. Joshua became the leader. He was the one that I mentioned this morning who made that powerful speech to the children of Israel. You got a choice to make. You got a choice to make this day, and as for me and my house, we'll serve Jehovah. And he roused the people so that they decided at that point that they would serve Jehovah as they were in the land rather than what they finally did, for the most part. Caleb was one of the two, along with Joshua, that was faithful. Caleb, when he entered the land, wanted some property that had been promised earlier by Moses. And then he was 70, what was he, 78 years old or something like somewhere in that neighborhood. And still he said he was as strong as he was in the earlier days. And he said, therefore, give me this mountain. I mean, he didn't want the lands out there, you know, that were the easiest lands to take under control, to plant crops on or whatever, or have, animals on. He just said, give me this mountain. He accepted the challenge. He rose of faith, innumerable in Hebrews 11. Abraham, Moses, and a great number of individuals there that we've studied from time to time. And there are outstanding examples in the book of Daniel, especially in the form of Daniel when he was told that he needed to worship the king. An edict came out from the king, and Daniel said he's not going to turn his back on his God. He's thrown in the fire furnace. Later, Darius, I mentioned to you, Darius was king of Medo-Persia, and they knew that some of these people knew that Daniel prayed to his God several times a day. And so they're trying to trick him. And so they got the king to pass a law, I guess you'd call it, an edict, that no prayer was to be offered to a god other than the gods of the people there. And so they caught Daniel, and as I mentioned earlier, Darius was trapped, had to throw him in the lion's den. God took care of him. But that showed God, Daniel's faith in his God. Here he was standing up against the king. Standing up against the king. And today, many times, we take the path of least resistance rather than stand up for God. Sometimes it's a whole lot easier to do that. To go along, to get along. To go along with the crowd if we're adults. Peer pressure is not just for young people. Peer pressure is for those of us who are older at our jobs or around our neighborhoods or whatever it is to be like other people without sticking out like a sore thumb as a Christian. Number of times we may have faced certain situations or yet we'll have to face certain situations. I'm sure that those of you who are still employed or not employed, you've had in your time where you've had situations in your employment where you had to make decisions. You know, you go out with the guys. I was an auditor. Auditors were known for going out, when they went out of town, going on a binge. And drinking. And I was known as the designated driver. I didn't touch that booze. And that's what we have to do, you know. I might have been tempted to other things to do that, but I saw so much when I was growing up that was one road I wasn't going to take. I get downright hateful in that in there. If you won't talk to me sometime and ask me if it's all right for you to go down that road, I'll be straight with you because I've seen too much happen and too many lives ruined because of liquor. So don't ask me if it's all right to take one drink. One drink is too many. It's one too many. Young people at school or in social situations are tempted. We can be tempted in our own home now with the internet. Some men, probably some women, I guess, are tempted by pornography. If any of you are tempted in that manner, you need to repent and seek the forgiveness of God There are many in churches of Christ, Baptist, Methodist, all religious groups that are guilty of this. It's been proved through various polls that have been taken. Young people, older people, older people are not immune. I mean, we don't know too much about the internet, but a lot of times we know enough to get into trouble if we want to figure it out. And some older people have figured it out, and they're going to get in trouble because of it. It can ruin you. You can put stuff on the internet that can ruin you for the future in job situations too. That's been proved. Where human resources, people at a place where you might be seeking employment, check out Facebook and all that kind of good stuff. And they've had people not to get hired. In fact, you get yourself put in jail for what you put on Facebook if you're not careful. I don't know anything about Facebook. I don't even want to know how to spell it. But I hear people talk about it. They own it. But I'm not going to get, I get on the internet and I'll look up my name, see what I've been doing lately. See what I did 50 years ago or 60 years ago. And then who knows about it. But you can get yourself in trouble. Not talking from experience, of course. We need to, as Christians, we need to stand steadfast, and we need to be like Daniel and stand uncompromising in that which we believe. And it's more getting more difficult to stand uncompromising in Bible belief, because fewer and fewer people believe in the authority of the Bible, the inerrant authority of the Bible. I mean, same way fewer and fewer Catholics believe that the Pope is right. I mean, they attack the Pope every chance they get. Who's he to say this? Well, if you were a Catholic in the past, 20 or 30 years ago, you did what the Pope said, or you said you did anyway. You said that was your belief if you were a Catholic. But there are people, including probably some in Churches of Christ, some in the Baptist group, which is probably closest, who don't pay much attention to what the Bible says anymore, don't want to know what the Bible says, because the Bible might condemn what they're doing. And people are doing all kinds of things now that they used not to do. In fact, they're doing things that we wouldn't talk about when I was growing up. I never heard about such things when I was growing up. Doesn't matter. That's what they're doing now, though. So David challenges us to serve and worship God with the same devotion and singleness of heart that he did. Now, we're going to mention these four earthly kingdoms, but you're not going to learn about four earthly kingdoms that's mentioned in the book of Daniel in the next 5 minutes, and I'm determined to try to get through in that amount of time. Let's look at Daniel chapter 2, verse 36. This is Nebuchadnezzar's dream about four images, four substances, elements, I guess you'd say. I don't know whether they're not all elements. And Daniel's interpretation of this. Verse 36. This is the dream. This is Daniel's interpretation. Now we will tell the interpretation of it for the king. You, O king, are the king of kings, for the God of heaven has given you a kingdom, power, strength, and glory. And wherever the children of men dwell, or the beasts of the field and the birds of the heaven, he has given them into your hand. And he has made you ruler over them all. You are this head of gold. So he saw in his dream a head of gold. He won't know what it was. Daniel says, you are that represent that kingdom of gold. Verse 39, talking about the Medo-Persian and Greeks. But after you shall arise another kingdom inferior to yours. Babylonian empire was big. It had engulfed more people than just Judah. I mean, I think it whipped up on Assyria, didn't it? And Assyria had taken over Israel, the northern kingdoms. So he talks about this kingdom to be inferior. Then another, a third kingdom of bronze. The second kingdom would be silver. I don't see that yet said, but it was silver. Third kingdom of bronze, which shall rule over all the earth. That would be Greece, and Italicus on down further. And the fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron. That's the Roman Empire. Inasmuch as iron breaks in pieces and shatters everything, and like iron that crushed. I mean, the Roman Empire was in charge. They didn't do it necessarily by just taking control of every individual, but they had enough control of certain individuals to have that crushing control. They did it in a little bit different way. That kingdom will break in pieces and crush all the others, which means that, you know, it will be the one that's in charge. Then, I'm going to skip down to verse 44 and 45. In the days of these kings, that is, in the days of the kings of the fourth kingdom, the Roman Empire, I'll set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. The kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Inasmuch as you saw that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it broke in the pieces, the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God has made known to the king what will come to pass after this. The dream is certain, and its interpretation is sure. In other words, king, it's going to happen, just like you dreamed it. And, of course, that came to pass, as history would reveal, that the Babylonian Empire was replaced by the Medo-Persian. That's even in the book of Daniel, it tells us. Medo-Persian was replaced by the Greek, by Greece, the Greek Empire, with primary suspect being Alexander the Great, I guess, being the big wheel in that situation. And then the iron was the Roman Empire. And in the day of that fourth kingdom, the Roman Empire, God was to set up an eternal kingdom. Now, we don't have to have a picture drawn for us any better than that, do we? That's speaking of the church. Speaking of the church coming into existence in that fourth kingdom during the Roman Empire. So thus the stone cut out of the mountain, which destroyed the great image, pointed to the establishment of the church. Jesus mentioned, or in relationship to the church, Jesus said, based on a statement made by Peter, that he was the Christ, the Son of the living God. He said, upon this rock. So there's that stone, rock. Jesus Christ is the chief cornerstone of the church. And so there we have the church referred to as a building of stone. In Daniel 7, there's a vision of four beasts. These beasts stand for these same four empires, and you can read it at your leisure. Look at chapter 7, 13, 14, which seems to speak of the resurrection, ascension, and coronation of Christ. Chapter 7, verse 13 and 14, and I'm going to have to move along. Chapter 7, 13 and 14. I was watching in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man, coming with the clouds of heaven. He came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. Then to him was given dominion and glory and kingdom, that all the peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom the one which shall not be destroyed. So Daniel presents a number of what we call apocalyptic or revelation type prophecies. In Daniel 8, we have the vision of a ram and a he-goat. Read that. It's an interesting story. The notable horn, or the main horn on this animal, is thought to be referring to Alexander the Great. And then it mentions a little horn down in Daniel 8, not the little big horn up in Montana, I guess it is. Little horn of Daniel chapter 8, verse 9 is probably mentions Antiochus Epiphanes the 3rd or 4th. We're going to have three studies within the next few months on the between the Testament period. We've got a few more minor prophets to study before then. But out of Daniel's writing and out of these visions, we picture Daniel as a man who served in faithful to his God in unique times and unique and unusual circumstances. But he stayed steadfast. He asserted that God is in control of history and will set aside certain human kingdoms and serve his purpose, just like he did there in the first century. Galatians 4:4 says what? In the fullness of time, God sent forth his Son. That was all in God's plan. Those Roman rulers would not have ruled if God had not decided that they should rule. So here's desire. And we're saying, well, why didn't he put some nicer guys in office? Well, he doesn't control that necessarily all the time. But he is still in control. We'll continue similar type studies on a Sunday mornings a few weeks ago, or a few months ago now probably. We completed our study, but we didn't completely study all the minor prophets. So we're going to complete that study in the next few Sunday nights that I preach, and then go to that between the Testament period. Look at some of that, because some things crop up during that period of time. Word synagogue. Synagogue is not used in the Old Testament, but it's used in the New Testament. Pharisees didn't exist in the Old Testament. Nothing said about them. Sadducees, they're in the New Testament. So there are a number of things that happen between the Testament period that we can learn from secular history. It's not inspired history, but it's secular history. That will help us in understanding the New Testament. The invitation song has been announced early for anybody tonight that's here and subject to the invitation. If you're not a Christian, why not come to Christ tonight? If you need to talk to me about becoming a Christian, I'd be glad to talk to you. If you need to talk to me about something else, I'd be glad to talk to you, or our elders would be glad to talk with you. If you need to rededicate your life to Christ, why not do that tonight if you've been thinking about it? If you need our prayers, we'd be glad to have prayer on your behalf tonight. Whatever you need, to come as we stand and sing.